episode number 13 of the All Pro is brought to you by thenerds.net and the coupon code SIGGLER, which can save you $8 off of any order of $50 or more. Thenerds.net has been offering a huge selection of electronics, computer hardware, printers, housewares, and office supplies since 1997. Thenerds.net has one of the easiest return policies on the internet. They have 100% secure shopping, 350,000 products in stock, and a dedicated staff waiting to assist you. Go to thenerds.net for the most aggressive pricing on the internet for netbooks,
office furniture,
portable GPS and navigation units,
multifunction machines,
laptops,
LCD monitors,
cleaning supplies,
paper,
file folders, and products from such top manufacturers as Epson,
Samsung,
Cisco,
Xerox,
Toshiba,
Canon,
Humminbird,
Acer,
Belkin,
Plantronics,
and Denon. Every order placed at thenerds.net ships within 24 hours and almost every order will arrive within 3 to 5 business days. Use the code SIGLER, that's SIGLER, to save $8 off of any order of $50 or more at thenerds.net for your home, office, and small business. And now, on with our story. Welcome to the All Pro, Book 3 in the Galactic Football League series, written and performed by New York Times bestselling novelist Scott Sigler. This novel is suitable for ages 12 and up and contains graphic on-field violence. This novel, along with Book 1, The Rookie, and Book 2, The Starter, is available as a full-length, unabridged digital audiobook, as an ebook for Kindle, Nook, iPad, iPhone, or any EPUB-compatible device, and as a signed, numbered, limited-run collector's edition hardcover. To order any version, go to scottsigler.com/GFL. Hello, junkies, and welcome to the All Pro episode number 13. I've got some news coming up for you on the MVP, both the first draft status and the pre-order, and a sweet GFL ebook prize you can win by a special, special tactic. But first, I want to introduce you to our new advertiser. These are the people who help keep the podcast free. And that new sponsor is GoToMyPC. Picture this. You're on your way home after work. You check your iPhone and see an urgent request that needs immediate attention. Dude, don't hassle with going back to the office. Just log onto your office computer via your GoToMyPC app for iPhone. It's like having your work computer right in your pocket. Take care of those last-minute requests from anywhere. With the GoToMyPC app for iPhone, you can edit PowerPoints, update spreadsheets, work on any file, again, right from your iPhone. You can also log on to your Mac or PC with the GoToMyPC app for your iPad. It's pretty sick-ass technology when you can use your phone like George Jetson to log into your computer. So try GoToMyPC today with a special 30-day free trial just for my listeners. Visit GoToMyPC.com, click on the Try It Free button, and enter the promo code PODCAST. Then download the free app to your iPad or iPhone. That is GoToMyPC.com. Try it free. Again, the promo code is PODCAST. Junkies, the MVP first draft is finished. Clocked in at 149,000 words. It is currently in review edit mode. Now, the pre-order for the MVP launches on Super Bowl Saturday, February 4th, 2012, 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern. Here's a thought to save yourself time. If you're thinking of buying the Starter or the All-Pro, just go to scottsigler.com/GFL right now and get that done. It'll save you time on the pre-order day, thus helping you get a lower number. Remember, the only way to get personalization on the MVP is to pre-order it. So if you pre-order it, you can request a message from the FDO to you with or without swear words. Now, if you order the Starter and the All Pro and don't mind waiting to have it shipped until September when the MVP comes out, you can get personalization on those as well. You can't get personalization on the Starter and the All Pro if you buy them and want them shipped right now. So buy those, get those out of the way so you don't have to deal with it on February 4th, Super Bowl Saturday. Tell us you want to wait to have them shipped with the MVP and get all that goodness all at once with all kinds of scribbling on it. And if you pre-order both Nocturnal and the MVP, you're going to get a GFL novella ebook for free. That same novella will not be podcast and will be in the GFL store at scottsigler.com, will be in Amazon, etc. So you'd be able to buy it. But if you pre-order Nocturnal and the MVP, save your little email receipts and we'll get you that ebook for free. It's like 40,000 words. It's huge. It's gigantic. After this episode, I will have a promo for The Angel Hunter by Jared Begora, and I will announce the winners of the Salisbury Steak Contest from the Friday Fix from a few weeks ago. I will tell you who they are and what they won. But for now, let's get into it. The All-Pro episode number 13. January 26, 2684. One final step marked the end of preseason. 4 weeks of preparation had led to this, to the posting of the final team roster. The GFL allowed 53 players per franchise. Teams could bring in as many players as they liked in the 4 weeks of preseason, but come kickoff for the opening game, the franchise had to reach that magic number. Of those 53, only 45 were named active and could dress for games. These players proudly wore their team colors on Sunday. They could accurately say, "I am a professional football player." The 8 players who were on the roster but couldn't dress for games were declared inactive. Inactives, also known as practice squad players, practiced every day, went through the same conditioning as everyone else, but didn't get the glory of a Sunday afternoon. Practice squad players often took on the role of opposition defenders, trying to give the starters the most accurate preparation for upcoming games. Being a practice squad player carried mixed emotions. You were getting paid to play football, but you weren't quite good enough to dress for games. An injury to someone higher up on the depth chart could move you up in an instant. Being inactive wasn't the role these players wanted, but it was still a damn sight better than, say, working in a mine for 12 hours a day. For young players, being named to the practice squad was often a good thing. It meant you had made the team, that you had time to develop your skills, and someday, maybe make the active roster. For older players, however, being named to the practice squad was often the last step before your career ended. If you were a seasoned veteran, your speed, reaction time, and other physical capabilities were already in decline. All things being equal, any team would choose a younger player for that practice squad slot. Younger players would get better, while the older players would only get worse. Position depth charts were posted throughout the preseason. As the regular season drew near, some players moved up and some players moved down. You always knew if you were a starter, a first backup, a second backup, etc. What you did not know, however, was if Coach Hokor would decide you weren't needed in the 45-player game day roster. For the third and fourth string players, anxiety over that pending decision grew and grew, building in intensity, right up until the team walked off the field for the final day of preseason practice. The Krakens gathered in the central locker room. Coach Hokor walked to the holo board.
"Final depth charts and active squad," he announced to the team. "If your name isn't on the board, come to my office immediately."
Hokor tapped the screen. The names flashed up, and that was that. No apologies, no, "Hey, thanks for trying." The GFL was an unforgiving business. You were either good enough to play, or you weren't. Quentin watched the players rather than the board. The starters, like John and Jew, didn't even bother to look. Their positions were assured. Like the Tweety brothers, half of the team simply filtered into their species-specific locker rooms. The remaining players moved forward. There were unabashed sighs of relief, body language cues showing that the players had found their name on the active roster. These reactions came first because those names were near the top of their positions. Next came the response of those who were still on the team but hadn't made the active roster. Some of these players showed excitement. They had thought themselves gone, but now had a second chance to prove their abilities. For others, the news came as a shock. Even if they had felt it coming, there was always an element of denial, that feeling of, "It can't happen to me." Juan A. Tagle was the first. He'd been a second-string left defensive end behind Alexander Michnik. The thought had been that Juan A. would develop, then become the starter when Alexander's skills faded due to age. Only Alexander's abilities hadn't faded. If anything, Alexander had only gotten better. Then the Krakens had picked up rookie Rich Palmer and the free agent Cliff Frost. Both of them were better than Wana, and apparently Hokor didn't see the need to dress the team's fifth-best defensive end. Wana's career had just been dealt a setback. He was now on the practice squad. Wana was 26, damn near a baby by key standards. He could bounce back, but it would depend on how hard he worked. For Mez Quiddick, however, all the hard work in the world couldn't change her downward slide. Last season, the Salerno defensive back had already begun to show signs of slowing. Her vertical leap had dropped a half inch coming into last year, then another half inch coming into this season. Too many hits had taken their toll. Quentin watched her, knew when she saw her name listed on the practice squad. He knew that moment because she started to shake. Her eye stalk sagged, drooping like wet spaghetti. Her raspers unrolled, dragged on the floor. She dropped to the ground and quivered. The other players simply stepped around her, looking to the board to find their own names. Quentin wanted to go to her, try to cheer her up, but he knew that would only make things worse. No one could help Ms. Quiddick. She would deal with it and contribute to the team in any way she could, or not deal with it and be cut altogether. The last players to react were those who hadn't made the team at all. They were last because they read the list of names over and over, the emotional side of their brain trying to see if the logical part had made a mistake, that their name was on the final roster, but somehow they had missed it. They hadn't missed it. They were just gone. Tiburon didn't find her name. Her career with the Krakens had come to a shattering, sudden end. Curiously, she seemed to handle it better than Mez Quiddick. Maybe Tiburon could catch on with another team, but at her age, it was unlikely. 23 years old, a 5-year veteran, and the Salerno's time in the GFL was over. She didn't bother walking into the Salerno locker room. Instead, she walked to the main exit, undoubtedly headed straight for Hokor's office. There, she would get a ticket for the next transport to Salerno space. Quentin looked back to the board, saw Tom Perilous standing there, nodding his head slowly. Tom hadn't made the roster. He smiled, nodded again, then sniffed. He wiped at his right eye. Quentin walked up to the older man. "Tom, you good?" Tom looked up, smiled. He started to talk, then closed his mouth. He swallowed. "I knew it was coming," he said finally. "My ankle never healed right. I was good enough to hold on to the starting spot for most of last season, but Beck is just playing better. I knew the writing was on the wall when Greedock brought her in last year. This just came in so fast, you know?" Quentin nodded. A year ago at this time, Tom Perilous had been the starting fullback for the Ionath Krakens. Today, cut from the team altogether, a discarded player. It could, and did, happen just that fast.
"Sorry, man," Quentin said. "I mean, I would have thought that you still had an edge on Kopor the Climber."
Tom shook his head. "Nah, I'm not too proud to realize that Kopor is getting better. He's only 24, Q. He's got his best years ahead of him. I'm 37 years old."
"You gonna try and catch on with another team? You're still better than 90% of the Tier 2 fullbacks out there."
Tom shook his head again. "I don't think so. The way I've been moving, playing, I might catch on for a season, but I also might mess myself up even more. After 15 years, my body's beat up enough. I'm already going to have a lot of pain as I get older. So will you."
Quentin nodded.
"I'm out, Q," Tom said. 15 years I played pro. You know how many sentients can say that? Not very many. 15 shucking years. Time to move on to something else." Quentin tried to think of another career, something to say that would give Tom at least a little encouragement. But in the moment, he couldn't conceive of a job anyone would want to do after football.
"Like what?"
Tom peeled off his shoulder armor and dropped it on the floor. He rolled out his neck, sniffed again, then smiled. "Maybe front office. All I know is football. Well, time for me to go see Hokor."
"Aren't you going to shower first?"
"Hell no," Tom said.
Just because this has to be done doesn't mean I'm going to make it easy on him. Let him smell my stink one last time.
Tom offered his hand. Quentin shook it.
This is the life we have chosen, Tom said. I put in 15 years. I can still walk, and I can eat things other than soup through a straw. I'm lucky.
Shuck that, Quentin said. You had those things because you were good. You were one of the best.
Tom slapped Quentin on the shoulder, then walked out of the locker room. Everyone filtered away from the board, leaving only two key standing there, staring. Per Ayet and Roth O'Lorick. Per Ayet, a backup defensive tackle, was 75 years old. Old even for the key, who often played into their late 60s. Roth O'Lorick, however, was only 30. Roth O, a backup center, just plain wasn't good enough. If he kept playing, he might catch on in Tier 2 or could likely wind up all the way down in Tier 3. The two key showed no visible emotion. Hurt radiated off of the two key. They stared at the board for another minute, then together they turned and scuttled toward the door. Quentin watched them go. Just like that, four careers had ended. Someday, he would be staring at that board, looking for his name over and over again. And no matter how many championships he won between now and then, it would crush him. He walked to the human locker room. Teams changed. That was life. What mattered for now was that the Krakens were his team. His coach believed in him. His team owner backed him up. All his friends were here, and soon the galaxy would see that the Krakens were a team to be feared. The only variable was time. The grav cab stopped in front of John Tweedy's apartment building. This time, however, Quentin wasn't there to see John. Chodo the Bright stepped out of the cab, looking up and down the street as he'd done dozens of times before. That was also the same, but also different. Now he was looking for reporters. Chodo leaned back into the cab.
It is clear. Come on.
Quentin got out, trying to ignore Chodo's coldness. Their friendship, their bond as teammates, it felt weakened, if not gone altogether. Quentin's insistence that the Quith Warriors accept Tara the Freak had strained relationships to the point of breaking. He hadn't thought it would be easy to integrate the Warriors, but even so, he drastically underestimated the cultural response. Pizzette the Servetus waited by the open door. Quentin and Chodo walked inside. The door shut behind them. Chodo immediately moved to a lobby chair. He pulled an object out of his pocket. The linebacker spent most of his money on historically accurate reproductions of ancient dead tree books. Chodo sat and started reading. Now that he'd done his job and seen Quentin safely inside the guarded building, he was done.
Mr. Elder Barnes,
Pizzette said,
welcome back. We are honored to have you as always. Shall I ring up to Mr. Tweedy?
Quentin shook his head.
I'm not here to see John. What apartment does Don Pine live in? And don't call him to tell him I'm coming up. This visit is a surprise.
Quentin ignored the buzzer. He wanted to hit something. Banging his fist on Don Pine's apartment door did little to diminish that urge.
Don, open up!
No answer. He banged again.
Open the damn door, Pine! We need to talk!
Quentin had waited for days for Pine to come and apologize, to take responsibility. That hadn't happened. Pine should have talked to the press, taken the blame for the things that he had done, the things that had turned Quentin into a media pariah. Quentin shouldn't have had to seek Pine out. At the same time, Quentin could try to guess Pine's state of mind. If Quentin had done something for which, say, John Tweedy had taken the blame, then John got into trouble for it, Quentin would have felt shame and guilt. Don had to be feeling those things right now. maybe it was hard to face a friend when you had done that friend wrong. Quentin focused on that thought, tried to calm himself. This had to be difficult for Don. He probably thought Quentin wanted to kill him. As soon as Quentin could show Don that there would be no retribution, no hatred, then Don would obviously do the right thing. The door opened. Don wore a strange apron thing, splotched with bits of color both new wet and faded old. His face showed his age now more than ever, a haunted look in the eyes that revealed his pain, his guilt. Don stepped aside and held the door open. Quentin walked in. The apartment design was identical to that of John's, a long entryway that led to a living room beyond. In that living room, paintings covered the walls. Only a few were framed. Most were rectangular canvases resting on the floor, hung at odd angles, or tacked up haphazardly. All of the paintings showed images of football players. Some were quite striking. Hard, abstract lines seemed to be colored gibberish, but almost immediately Quentin recognized John Tweedy, Michael Kimberlin, and several other players. Other paintings showed grotesque versions of a human face. Blue skin, staring eyes, dark shadows. Self-portraits of a man that didn't like himself very much. A new painting, gleaming wet, sat half-completed on an easel in the middle of the room. Only the outline and the eyes were done. So dark. The same haunted expression Quentin had seen when Don opened the door.
You're a painter?
Can't put one past you, Quentin.
Quentin turned to look at his mentor.
This is why you don't have anyone over? You embarrassed about this or something?
Don shrugged.
My space is my space. I don't need to justify it to anyone. But, yeah, stuff like this, it's not really how the team sees me, you know?
Quentin nodded. The team didn't see Don like this at all. They saw a champion, a leader, a man that exuded confidence and support at all times. Quentin instantly understood why Don didn't invite anyone in. Team leaders weren't supposed to be cauldrons of self-hatred.
Well, did you read Yolanda's article?
Don nodded.
You see the press conference?
Don nodded again. Quentin waited, trying to be patient. It wouldn't be easy for Don to step up and reveal that he had been the one shaving points, throwing games, selling out for Mopook the Sneaky. Don said nothing.
Don, it's time. You have to come clean.
Don closed his eyes. His fingertips pressed hard into his temples, circling there like small drills trying to punch through his skull and into his brain. A bit of black paint on his left index finger smeared across his left eyebrow. Still, Quentin waited. Patience. No need to rush things. No reason to lose his temper. His friend didn't say anything.
Don, are you okay?
The older quarterback shook his head.
How can I be okay? That article crucified you, man. It's my fault.
Only the drug smuggling part, Quentin said. Well, and the gambling. And the throwing games.
The words didn't sound as helpful as he had thought they would.
I feel real bad, Don said. Honestly, Q, I can't even tell you how awful I feel about all of this.
Don stopped rubbing his temples and stared at the floor. He shifted his weight from foot to foot. It took Quentin a moment to read Don's body language. He'd never seen Don act like this before, never seen him act indecisive. Quentin waited. Tense silence filled the room. Don looked up, met Quentin's eyes for a moment. Then he looked away, staring at one of the self-hating paintings on the wall. Quentin felt a crawling feeling of shock. Slowly, not wanting to believe it for a second, realization set in.
You're not going to fess up? You're not going to tell Yolanda?
Like that bitch would do anything to fix this.
Fine, then not her. Anyone else. There's 100 reporters waiting to hear the truth, Don.
Don's eyes flicked to another painting. An older painting, brighter, with bolder lines. An abstract quarterback wearing silver, gold, and copper. Don Pine, back in his championship days. Quentin realized he was breathing heavier, that his temper was rising. He calmed himself, tried to think. He had put his career at risk to save Don's. Quentin had risked his life. That dark secret had been fine as long as it remained a secret, but now the story was out. Out, and with the wrong man taking the rap. Don would snap out of this at any moment. He would step up and do the right thing. He had to. Don, you're going to tell someone, right? You're not going to leave me hanging, right?
Don said nothing. Quentin's chest seemed heavy. It ached. He'd never felt anything like this before. He'd never really had friends back on McCovey. Other than Mr. Sam, Don Pine was the first person Quentin had truly trusted. Don's mentoring, his patience, those things had helped make Quentin the player he was today, the leader he was today. Yet this mentor, the man who had risen to the pinnacle of their profession, he was turning his back on real leadership. The leadership of responsibility.
I don't believe it, Quentin said. You're not going to tell the truth.
Don shook his head.
I can't, Quentin. You can't? No, old man. You won't. You're really going to hang me out to dry?
Don turned, the pain in his soul etched on his expression.
Quentin, you gotta understand. I've only got a year or two left. If this gets out now, my career is over.
Was this level of betrayal even possible?
What about my career? You're the starting quarterback. Greedock is standing up for you. This is your team, man. The Galaxy thinks I'm a scumbag, Don. Sentients are saying that
they'll get over it, Don said.
You're young, Quentin. You're a star. As long as you keep throwing completions and scoring touchdowns, the Galaxy could give a crap if you chop up babies and cook them in a stew. That's easy for you to say. Look at you, Tweety. He's actually wanted for murder, and he's going to line up on Sunday and play in the biggest sports league that history has ever known. Don't you get it, Quentin? As long as you do what you can do, it doesn't matter what people think. It matters to me.
Don stared at him, but couldn't hold it. He looked away.
Sure, okay. I know what matters to you, but you don't understand. You can't understand until you're standing where I'm standing. At my age, the way I've played the past few seasons, a scandal like this means no one will touch me. But that doesn't matter. You're the one who did wrong, not me. Are you going to be a coward, or are you going to face the music?
Quentin again waited for an answer, hoping that this time, Don would see what needed to be done, that he would do the right thing. But Don Pine didn't waver.
I can't, he said. Not now. Not this season. I'm sorry. The coward. How could Pine do this? And what if I tell the media? What if I tell them all about your involvement with Mopook? How your entire team smuggled drugs to pay off your debt so you could stop throwing games?
Don closed his eyes and looked down.
I'll deny it. And you won't do that, Quentin. I know you. If you start a he said thing, it'll mess with team unity, which is already at a breaking point thanks to Tara the Freak. Right now, the team is behind you. If you start forcing them to choose between you and me, the team will lose focus. That will cost us games. Not all of them, but enough to keep us out of the playoffs. Maybe even enough to put us on the relegation bubble again. You won't say anything, because as much as your integrity means to you, we both know winning means even more.
Quentin's temper rippled, simmered just below boiling. He wanted to hit Don, to smash the easel over his head, to tear down all these feel-sorry-for-myself paintings and rip them to shreds. And yet, Don was right. As awful as this was, Quentin would rather carry the weight of false accusations than free himself at the expense of the team.
I wish I'd never helped you, Quentin said. I should have left you broken in that hospital bed. Should have let them finish you.
Quentin's hand shot out, grabbed the painting off the easel. He threw it at Don. The wet canvas flapped against Don's head, then fell to the floor. Don stared. The dark paint of his self-hatred caked on his face.
Quentin's hands balled into fists, but he kept them at his sides. He walked out of the apartment, his heavy feet echoing off the entry walls. I told you I would have the winners of the Salisbury Steak Contest, which was a contest that we did at the end of the 2011 year in review, kind of to see who was still listening, because we were rambling for an hour. So we asked people to tweet the hashtag Salisbury Steak. If you're not following me on Twitter, do it. Make a Twitter account. Follow at Scott Sigler. One word. Do this. Do this, man. Anyways, the winners were Andrew Tetrault, Michael Schleifstein, and Will Zapata. All of them received a couple of Sigler paperbacks and a Hutchins print edition book because, sadly, although the director of Doom has exquisite taste in all things and is high class all around, for some strange reason, she likes Hutchins. So we gave away some Hutchins books. Damn it! Yes, we are still working on getting our new junkie shoutouts back in order. Hopefully we'll have those there soon. If you signed up with an account in 2012, trust me, we will be getting to your new junkie shoutout. I leave you now with the promo for The Angel Hunter by Jared Begora, and I will talk to you all real soon.
When you think of an angel, what do you picture? Is it a chubby baby? Or halo and wings? Or a flaming sword? What if angels are real? What if they're watching over us, but not for the reasons we think? They aren't here to protect us. They have a much more sinister agenda. Lucille is a devout Catholic who prays every day. Her prayers are about to be answered, but not in any way she had ever imagined. She's about to come face to face with an angel and plunge headfirst into a world of supernatural beings and secret organizations. She'll be facing an endless army of invisible enemies. Her only hope for survival is a legendary assassin who may not even exist, the Angel Hunter. The Angel Hunter is a novel by Jared Begora. It's available on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. Find out more at angelhunter.info. The angels are coming. Let's hope they don't decide to answer your prayers.
You have been listening to The All-Pro Book 3 in the Galactic Football League series, written and performed by Scott Sigler, produced by the A-Team of Arioch, Morningstar, and A. Kovacs. For more information on the author and for more free stories, go to scottsigler.com. Theme music is the song Heaven's a Lie by the band Lacuna Coil.